is invited.
Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 67 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Kayla Hall.
These have been the actions of a privileged few, so divorced from the day-to-day lives of their constituents that the suffering is a political afterthought.
Governor Beshear calls the partial government shutdown needless and disgusting. He says he hopes it's over.
A Portsmouth man shot during an alleged burglary attempt has died.
And it's back to square one in the search for property to build a new Rowan County jail.
In sports, the Cardinals can win the National League pennant with a victory over the Dodgers this afternoon.
But Luke has the stocks.
Cloudy with showers possible tonight, low of 49 degrees. The complete weather forecast is coming up, but first this news.
WSAZ is reporting that a Portsmouth man who was shot while allegedly breaking into a home on 23rd Street Sunday evening has died. Police say 31-year-old Keith Richards was shot after he crawled through a window of the house and did not leave when a member of the homeowner's family told him to do so. Richards was removed from life support Monday. No charges have been filed against the shooter. Police are treating it as a case of self-defense.
Kentucky's senior senator is making it clear that the deal he struck today with Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid to reopen the federal government and raise the debt ceiling is not at all what he had hoped for. Republican Mitch McConnell says he's happy that the cuts achieved under the Budget Control Act remain in place. McConnell says it's the first time since the Korean War that the federal budget has been reduced 2 years in a row. However, he says his party has not been able to block implementation of the Affordable Care Act, which McConnell contends is hurting the economy.
Republicans remain determined to repeal this terrible law. But for today, the relief we hope for is to reopen the government, avoid default, and protect the historic cuts we achieved under the Budget Control Act.
McConnell discussed the agreement on the Senate floor today. It calls for the government to be funded through January 15th. The debt ceiling would be lifted through February 7th.
Governor Beshear is not extending any gratitude to Senator Mitch McConnell for co-authoring the plan to reopen the federal government. The Democrat spoke at a press conference in Frankfort this afternoon. Beshear claims McConnell has been missing in action for 3 months and doesn't deserve any credit for today's accord.
You know, when you talk about credit, a firefighter shouldn't be getting credit for helping put out a fire when he helped to start the fire to start with. So I don't think there's any credit to go around.
The governor says over the last few weeks, the American people have been witness to a government in Washington that is not attuned to the needs of its people.
It's back to the drawing board for Rowan County as officials continue to search for a spot for the proposed 250 to 300-bed regional detention center that they want to build. Judge Executive Jim Nichols says a 33-acre site west of Moorhead has been identified, but the owner of that property recently withdrew his offer to sell it. The county still has four or five other sites it can consider, and Nichols expects it to take a few months before one of them is selected. Despite the setback, he doesn't believe the county's timeline for getting the new jail constructed will be affected.
When I started this process, we had lots of time, and we still do. We still have time to do that. We're good till October of 16. I'm sure this county's in the middle of a construction project. The current facility can be worked out to stay there a little longer if necessary until we get it done. But I think we're still online. It can still be done, yes.
Since the county is paying for the project, Nichols says Rowan officials can still apply to the state for permission to build the new jail without a site for it being finalized. Rowan is slated to turn over the property where its current detention sits to Moorhead State University in the fall of 2016.
Work continues on crafting a fairness ordinance for Moorhead. City Council had hoped to hold a first reading of the proposed legislation at its Monday meeting, but Mayor David Perkins says it wasn't ready for an official review. The town's attorney is still discussing the finer points of it with the Kentucky Human Rights Commission. According to Perkins, it's important that Moorhead's fairness ordinance be a common sense measure that is easy to legislate and enforce.
The simpler things are, the better it is for anybody, John Doe, to understand. When you start piling on legalese, then it becomes a quagmire. Now, I've seen that happen in, you know, commercial contracts. So sometimes less is more.
The fairness ordinance would prohibit discrimination based on sexual preference or gender identity in such things as housing, employment, and restaurants.
Olive Hill has settled its long-lasting budget battle. WSAZ reports City Council voted unanimously Tuesday night in favor of the proposed 0.5% payroll tax. A previously proposed 1.5% tax was withdrawn after backlash from citizens at one meeting. The tax is aimed at mending a $60,000 budget shortfall. The payroll tax will go into effect after legal counsel gives its stamp of approval.
Citizens in a green-up county town will not be seeing an increase in their property taxes. MSPR's Jordan Simonson has that story.
According to the Ashland Independent, the Flatwoods City Council this week voted unanimously to reject a proposed hike in the city's property tax rate. The proposal would have increased them by 4% and would have added up to nearly 32.5 cents of assessed value per $100 of property. It would have reportedly generated just over $34,000 in new revenue. The Flatwoods Council will meet again on Thursday to vote on a lesser rate of 31 cents per $100 of assessed value. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, this is Jordan Simonson.
An Ashland City Commissioner calls it a sign of an improving economy. Kevin Gunderson is referring to plans by the package delivery company FedEx to double the weight of the materials it is shipping from the Tri-State Airport near Huntington.
They're doing that for two reasons. One is to move mail out of the Charleston Airport, deliver it from Huntington, plus increase additional lift capacity for the outgoing equipment and parcels that FedEx delivers so well.
Gunderson serves on the Tri-State Airport Board. He says the increased volume of packages being handled by FedEx shows there's more economic activity in the region. The company's plant is located at the airport.
A consultant who has just completed a new comprehensive plan for the city of Ashland says the community's heritage is one of its biggest assets as it prepares for the future. Amy Williams is with the Taylor Seifker Williams Design Group of Louisville. Williams' firm spent 9 months conducting interviews with residents and city leaders about the kind of community they want Ashland to be. She says it already has a lot of character.
I think it's very, very quaint community, kind of nestled right here against the Ohio is picturesque with the bluffs is very, very, very cute and quaint. And again, I think Ashland has this pre-war kind of layout, which is much more organic than the neighborhoods in the 90s and 2000s where it's cul-de-sacs and that sort of thing. It makes for a much more community that shows its character.
Williams says it was apparent from the interaction her company had with Ashland residents that they have a great deal of affection for their hometown.
29 Kentuckians lost their lives this year due to domestic violence. Those victims will be honored in conjunction with Domestic Violence Awareness Month. MSPR's Caleb Noe has the story.
According to the Ashland Independent, Safe Harbor's annual Candlelight Vigil will be held on Monday, October 28th in the Harbor Hill Cafeteria. Safe Harbor is a domestic violence shelter serving the counties of Boyd, Greenup, Carter, Elliott, and Lawrence. The ceremony includes the lighting of candles and reading of the names of this year's domestic violence deaths in Kentucky. The list includes two victims from Boyd and Greenup counties. The city of Ashland will be a white ribbon recipient for the vigil for its various contributions to the program, including a donation of 34 apartments for the use of victims of domestic abuse. The candlelight vigil will begin at 5 p.m. For Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Caleb Noe reporting.
A public hearing in Frankfort this week on charter schools underscored stark differences of opinion between the Republican chairman of the Senate Education Committee, Mike Wilson, and his counterpart in the House, Democrat Derek Graham. Despite hearing testimony from a Jefferson County school official who questioned the cost and effectiveness of charter schools, Wilson continues to back the concept. He says he's a strong supporter of traditional public schools, but a charter school simply gives parents another option for their children's education. Wilson lives in Bowling Green and says a program now operating there is an example of how a good charter school should work in Kentucky.
I think we have a school in down in Warren County that I think is a pretty good example of what I would consider a charter school, is the Gatton Academy, math and science, and where we have juniors and seniors there.
The Gatton Academy allows gifted math and science students who are juniors and seniors in high school to take classes at Western Kentucky University. There are 120 students in the program each year.
Retired Frankfort High School teacher Derek Graham chairs the House Education Committee, and he believes charter schools in Kentucky would be a waste of valuable resources. He says any money that would be appropriated for charter schools in the Commonwealth would be funds taken away from schools now operating.
And as a former public school teacher, I think the more we take funds away from our schools, the more disservice we are providing to the teachers who are on the front line trying to educate those students the best way they possibly can with the lack of resources or the lack of additional resources that are needed.
Graham also says the General Assembly has already approved legislation permitting school districts of innovation. He contends it provides the same kind of flexibility that charter school proponents say is needed to make the educational process more effective.
A 26-year veteran in education is the 2014 Kentucky Teacher of the Year. Murray Elementary third grade teacher Holly Bloodworth was recognized during today's event in the state capitol. Bloodworth says she has grown wiser over the years.
I feel like it's kind of for my whole body of work, you know. I feel like I'm a better teacher now than I've ever been because I still love going to work every day. I love the students that I teach and their families, and I have that advantage of experience.
The Western Kentucky teacher says she's worked alongside fabulous teachers and can share the honor with them. Bloodworth was awarded $10,000 and a crystal glass bowl.
A company planning to build a natural gas pipeline in Kentucky says it has secured land use deals in parts of nine counties along the pipeline's proposed path. Officials with the Bluegrass Pipeline say they have reached easement agreements with private landowners in nine of the 13 counties along the proposed route. The path will apparently bypass a Nelson County property owned by Catholic monks.
And finally this afternoon, Kentucky Congressman Ed Whitfield is accusing the Obama administration of playing favorites among energy companies. The Christian County Republican says the federal government has levied fines of more than $100 million against BP for its 2010 oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Yet, he claims, the administration has taken no action against the wind turbine industry for causing the deaths of thousands of legally protected birds.
Wind turbines overall kill over 573,000 birds each year, including over 83,000 birds of prey. So the federal government under this administration is not prosecuting violations of these federal laws because of their favor of the wind industry.
Now, says Whitfield, the administration is considering a $6 billion extension of a federal tax subsidy for wind turbine production.
Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Menifee, Robertson, and Wolf. Tonight, cooler and cloudy, showers likely in the evening, then a chance of showers. Lows, 49 to 54 degrees, chance of rain is at 60%. Thursday, mostly cloudy. Showers are likely, mainly in the morning. Highs in the upper 50s with a chance of rain at 70%. Thursday night, cooler, partly cloudy, patchy fog, then areas of dense fog developing toward dawn. Lows between 39 to 44 degrees. Friday, patchy dense fog early in the morning, otherwise mostly sunny. Highs in the mid-60s. Currently in Ashland, it's 64 degrees. Flemingsburg, 66 degrees. Winchester, 64 degrees. Lexington and Inez, it's 65 degrees. And in Moorhead, it is 67 degrees.
It is 4:45. You are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. It is good to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. On our feature story, recently students at the Rowan County Middle School enjoyed an opportunity to take their classroom learning outdoors. Aaron Rummage of MSU's Center for Environmental Education has this report.
10 years after Mary Beth Armstrong and Melissa Bolds, eighth grade teachers at Rowan County Middle School, attended a program called Reading the River, they began a similar program. Armstrong says that after the workshop, they decided to do a mini Reading the River with their students.
That's where this environmental day came from, because it was such a great experience for us. We were so excited about being outdoors. We learned so much about water quality and why it's important that each of us take a part in taking care of the water. So we wanted to share that with our students.
The eighth grade field trip to Robert Elementary's outdoor classroom developed into Environmental Day. As more than just an informational lecture, the outdoor environment made for an exercise many students were not accustomed to. Armstrong says that it is important for students to take on the responsibility of taking care of their watershed.
A lot of our students don't have the experience of being outdoors. They don't understand why we have a responsibility to take care of our watershed. They don't understand, you know, when they turn the tap on at their homes to get water, they don't understand that there's a process of taking care of that water so that it's less expensive for them when they turn on the tap, that it's important that they take care of the water out in nature so that when it comes out their tap, they're not paying so much for it and it's safe to drink.
During the outdoor learning experience, students participated in multiple water care activities, which in turn spiked their interest in the subject. Camuel Hart, an eighth grader at Rowan County Middle School, really enjoyed his time in the activities his class was a part of.
Working in the field, hands-on, helps a lot of people learn more effectively than sitting and memorizing from textbooks or copying notes, because it gives you a good look into what an actual scientist would do rather than talking about what one would do.
They check for dissolved oxygen, they check for the pH level, and we talk about that in the classroom before we come out to the creek, and then we'll talk about it again when we go back in. We did macroinvertebrate studies because we talked about how macroinvertebrates are used to determine water quality. It's a bioassessment. It's a real cheap, inexpensive way that we can find out what the quality of water is like in a particular area. And then the kids also do habitat assessments so we can see what kind of human impact we've had from building parking lots or from building, changing, converting land from forest land to farmland, how all of that, the way we use our land, has an impact on the stream.
Mary Beth Armstrong with Rowan County Middle School. Through her work and that of Melissa Bolds, 8th grade students at Rowan County Middle School are able to experience Environmental Day each year. I'm Erin Rummage with the Environmental Center for Education at Morehead State University.
The preceding report was supported by a grant from the U.S. EPA under the Clean Water Act, administered through the Kentucky Division of Water. It is 4:48, all things considered, from NPR at 5 o'clock and sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from the MSU East Kentucky Small Business Development Center, serving 54 counties throughout Appalachian Kentucky to encourage manufacturers, wholesalers, and service providers to export products and services beyond the Kentucky region. Based at the Small Business Development Center in Paintsville, the Export Initiative seeks to market Kentucky to the world. More information at 606-788-7272, online at moreheadstate.edu/sbdc.
The National League may crown a champion today. Good evening, reporting for Morehead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Chase Scott. Looking to take the next step to the World Series, the St. Louis Cardinals are currently out west taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 5 of the National League Championship Series, leading 3-1. First pitch was tossed at 4 o'clock, and the score currently stands at nothing apiece in the bottom of the second inning. The series has been dominated by pitching, and that should continue today as the Cardinals have Joe Kelly on the mound, who has only given up 4 earned runs while striking out 10 over 2 games. The Dodgers will try and stay alive by having their right-handed ace, Zach Greinke, on the bump, who has pitched 2 games so far in the playoffs, giving up only 4 earned runs and also striking out 13. In the nightcap of playoff baseball, it's game four between the host Detroit Tigers and the Boston Red Sox in the American League Championship Series. The Red Sox have a 2-1 lead after winning last night by a score of 1-0. That was the third straight game that the final score was determined by one run. The Tigers' designated hitter Victor Martinez says this isn't the first time the Tigers have been down 2-1 in a playoff.
We're down 2-1 in the ALDS, and we were able to come back on a tough team, on a tough environment, you know, playing in Oakland. So, I mean, we hopes are there, and, you know, just come back tomorrow and keep playing hard and see what happens.
The Tigers ranked first in batting average in the regular season while ranking second in runs scored, on base percentage, as well as slugging percentage. First pitch from Detroit is scheduled for 8 p.m. The Rowan County football team will face a huge challenge as the Vikings try to extend their two-game winning streak Friday night at Johnson Central against the state's second-ranked Class 4A team. Unbeaten Central has outscored its 2013 opponents by an average of 59-12 points per game. Rowan coach Kyle Singleton calls the Golden Eagles a great team, but he's warning his team not to be intimidated by them.
We just got to make sure that we're just trying to stay sound and continue to get better at what we do rather than worry about them as much. And, you know, I think if we can, you know, help, you know, keep improving ourselves, I think it'll give us a chance.
The Vikings will go into their district contest at Johnson Central with a 3-5 record. Moorhead State football coach Rob Tenier did some tinkering with the Eagles' defense during their off week, and in hopes that the effort will pay off during Saturday's PFL game at Valparaiso. Tenier says he and his assistants took steps to fix a key problem.
Our linebacker play needs to be a little more consistent. And, you know, we've done some things and changed a few things schematically to help us allow them to maybe play one gap instead of two gap. And I think that'll help moving forward. And I think, you know, that's the area we need our most improvement.
Tenier says MSU's defensive linemen also have to start making more negative yardage plays. The 2-4 Eagles defense has allowed an average of 42 points and about 530 yards per game to their opponents this season. Kentucky football coach Mark Stoops admits his Wildcats are still trying to bounce back both physically and mentally after last week's 48-7 loss to top-ranked Alabama. UK is in a bye week, and that should help quarterback Jalen Whitlow, who was knocked out of the Bama game with an ankle injury. Stoops says it's too early for him to rule Whitlow out for the Big Blues game a week from Saturday at Mississippi State.
I hate to say that, I mean, because things change with ankles. People respond differently. So it's like I said, I'll give you a little nugget here every 3 or 4 days on that, because that's what I think that'll be an indicator on that.
If Whitlow can't go against Mississippi State, it's likely Maxwell Smith will replace him behind center. The 13-member college football playoff selection committee was officially introduced today. The committee will be responsible for selecting the 4 teams that advance to the college football playoff beginning after the 2014 regular season. The committee has a star-studded lineup, including former NFL quarterbacks Pat Hayden, Archie Manning, and Oliver Luck, and former coaches Tom Osborne, Barry Alvarez, and Tyrone Willingham. Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari won't say if he thinks his reconstructed Wildcats should go into the upcoming season as the nation's top-ranked team. Speaking Tuesday to reporters, Calipari noted that he has coached a lot of number one teams in his career, but those were all veteran-laden groups, which is not the case with his freshman Leighton Cats.
You're talking about an inexperienced team. We'll be the most inexperienced team in the country, but we're really talented. We got great size and speed and skill, and will we be a great defensive team and rebounding team, and will we share the ball? If we do that, we have a chance to be one of the best teams in the country. Are we right now? I have no idea, because I don't know where anybody else is.
Kentucky has been picked to win the Southeastern Conference men's basketball title. The Wildcats received 21 first-place votes, while Florida got 5, and Tennessee won in balloting released today at SEC Media Days. Wildcat freshman Julius Randle was also chosen preseason player of the year with 11 votes. 6 other players received at least 1 vote. And finally, the Round County boys soccer team will vie with Fleming County at 6 o'clock tonight for the title of the 61st District Tournament. Coach Max Hammond says comping with the crown is a must for the tradition-rich Rowan program.
It's expected out of every team in Rowan County. I mean, I don't know how many they've won straight, but I think ever since it went to the district with Bath, Menifee, Fleming, and I know for a few years there I had Jackson City in it. You know, I'm pretty sure Round County has won every time. So we've got to keep that tradition up, that's for sure.
The Vikings are 9-8-3 this season, including a 6-1 win on August 22nd over Fleming. The Panthers are 10-6-3 this season. That's all for sports. Have a great evening. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Chase Scott.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. MSU Volleyball hosts Jacksonville State Friday night at 7 p.m. and Tennessee Tech Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. MSU Soccer has a home match with Murray State Sunday at 1 p.m. Tickets and more information available from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. Stocks closed at session highs with the Dow up over 200 points and the S&P within 1% of its record after Senate leaders announced the long-awaited compromise to raise the debt ceiling and put an end to the government shutdown, and the agreement came just one day before the Treasury was expected to exhaust its ability to borrow money. And at 4 o'clock, the Dow showing a gain of 205.82 at 15,373.83. The S&P 500 was up 23.48 at 1721.54, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 45.42 at 3839.43. All key S&P sectors were firmly in positive territory, lifted by financials and healthcare in particular. And New York Stock Exchange breadth was 24-6 in favor of winning stocks over losers. Gold was around break-even on the day, and oil was up 1.5%. And in very big economic news, after the closing bell on Tuesday, Fitch Credit Rating Agency placed the United States AAA rating on rating watch negative, citing the ongoing debt ceiling gridlock, and Fitch's move echoed a similar action by S&P in August 2011. On the economic front, home builder sentiment slipped to 55 in October, touching the lowest level since June. Worries over Washington and higher labor costs, of course, are affecting housing. An economist polled by Reuters had predicted the index would remain flat at 58. And the Federal Reserve's Beige Book, which is a survey of regional economic activity, also expected today. Among companies reporting earnings, Bank of America advanced after the financial giant reported earnings that topped expectations and reversed a year-ago loss as provisions for credit losses declined. PepsiCo ticked higher after the beverage and snack maker posted higher earnings and said it was on track to meet its financial goals for the year. And United Rentals rallied after the equipment rental company posted earnings that topped expectations. And American Express, eBay, and IBM are slated to post quarterly results after the closing bell. Turning now to individual stocks, it was Ashland Incorporated up $1.23 at $89.41, CSX down 21 cents at $25.89, AEP up 29 cents at $43.77, AK Steel down 24 cents at $4.12, Marathon Petroleum up 51 cents at $68.95, and Windstream was up 13 cents to finish at $8.54. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking another look at your weather forecast. Tonight, cooler with cloudy skies, showers likely in the evening, then a chance of showers, lows 49 to 54 degrees. The chance of rain is at 60%. Thursday, mostly cloudy with showers likely, mainly in the morning, highs in the upper 50s, chance of rain is at 70%. Thursday night, cooler, partly cloudy with patchy fog, then areas of dense fog developing toward dawn. Lows between 39 and 44 degrees. Friday, patchy dense fog early in the morning, otherwise mostly sunny, with highs in the mid-60s. Friday night, partly cloudy skies with lows in the mid-40s. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers, highs in the lower 60s. In Morehead, it's 67 degrees.
And that's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Meraz, Tanner Boyd, Shelby Steele, Chase Scott, Joshua Grandison, Paul Hitchcock, Caleb Noe, and Jordan Simonson. Our feature story was done by Aaron Romage of the MSU Center for Environmental Education. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead. And translator W202BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Kayla Hall and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte. MSPR News, it's 5 o'clock.